My name is Phil O'Hara, and I'm with Dalhousie University, and I strongly encourage you in future, you might look for volunteer things, because it's kind of nice to come and meet new people and make my new best friend. but it's kind of fun to volunteer to this sort of event and at least get to meet a few extra people through doing that. So next year, perhaps you might want to take advantage of those opportunities. I do like to start on time. With my own students, I always used to use, if they came in late, I always talked about Mickey's hand here and Mickey's hand there. I've never ever been a place where actually Mickey was next door when I was talking about it. So maybe we'll catch the people coming in late. But you all came here to talk about social networking and social justice. And I picked this particularly because I'm interested in what's going on here and how it's going to impact back in my university. So I hope you will join me in welcoming Susan Castricum. And I'm going to let her take over and just kind of cue her with a few time slots as we get near the end. And I do, though, before we get started, want to strongly encourage you to walk right out of this room to one of those email terminals and pick the session and provide her with a little bit of feedback by filling out a form so she gets some information coming back and how things went and how you perceived the session and those kinds of things. And if you can't do that right away, I won't be following you to see if you do it. Well, a few of you might, but I won't be following you, but you will have until the 29th of October, and at that time they close. But if you did say you were coming to the session, it's in the same place. The button is there, or the link is there to do the session evaluation. You will get reminders next week from EDUCAUSE about doing evaluations so that they can get as much feedback, including the full event evaluation. So with no further ado, I turn the floor over.
Thanks very much, and welcome to Social Networking for Social Justice. In case anyone did miss it, we have clickers in the front half of this side of the seating. So if anyone wants to participate in the questions that I'll be asking from time to time with that, then I'd welcome you even to go grab one and run back to where you're sitting if you like where you're sitting. So I'm going to be introducing a project that we've worked on at Boston College to get young people, both college-aged and younger, more engaged in questions of social justice. And we're aware in doing this that we're sharing the same aspiration of many, many other people, both in terms of getting young people more engaged in social justice questions, and taking advantage of the great opportunities for collaborative learning in general that technology offers us more and more all the time. So I really am hoping this can become a sort of wider conversation. And so to that aim, have built in these questions that hopefully we can address as we come to them. I'll leave time at the end for a little bit of Q&A, but I'd very much welcome any questions or thoughts as we move along. So introducing the project, it is a website. It has areas for pushing out content as well as for viewers to contribute in various ways, and also social networking features. And it was the original inspiration of Bell Liang, a professor of adolescent psychology at Boston College, our Lynch School of Education, and was developed by a student leadership team working under her direction. An outside consultant was contracted for work on the graphic design, also one on the database development. Our group in instructional design and e-teaching services at Boston College was brought in for project management purposes, and our associate director, Jeannie Poe, was the overall project manager. My particular role in it was to coordinate the development of the website. So what we're aiming to cover today, first of all, why Generation Pulse? What problem did we think we were trying to address in developing this project, and why did this seem like a particular, you know, a good solution for it to meet that question? What did we actually do? How did we create it? What happened along the way? And then what were those outcomes? As far as we know, what sort of impact has it had? What have we learned from doing it? And I also wanted to mention at this point that there's a flyer online for anybody interested in following up, learning more about the project and getting involved in it. So a little bit about our context at Boston College. We're a university of over 14,000 students, about over 4,000 grad students and 700 full-time faculty. It's a Roman Catholic institution founded by Jesuits, still very much a Jesuit institution. So that tradition of formation is very much part of the teaching there. That sense of forming men and women to be men and women for others, both socially and spiritually. So community service is a big part of what goes on there. Service trips as an alternative to spring break destinations, as I know is happening on many campuses now. So having said that, BC is a complex place, complex environment. Students have different priorities. Many students have, you know, different priorities at different times. And I'm curious to get a reading of how that is at all of your institutions as well. So when you think about the students on your campus, what does concern them most today? And I'll initiate a question here if I can. So feel free to use your clickers and vote. The button that turns them on is on the very bottom. I like telling people that because I'm always the one who forgets it. And let's see. Yes, getting a job in the future. It's hard to argue with that. I wonder if a lot of what we're seeing is energy that is directed by necessity in one direction, where if you ask students what they really wanted to be doing with their time and energies, the answer might be a little different. So let's look at another one. How politically active are your students? Right, so vocal minority, but most students aren't particularly active. It sounds like we're just a strong curve there happening. What is it that motivates them to be involved when they are? Any reflections on that? Yes. Right. So helping them find ways to see direct connections is often a huge part of it, I think. Yeah. Right. A crisis that gets lots of media attention. Yeah. Okay. So now to social justice in a more direct sort of way. How would you answer this one? How engaged are students with issues of social justice? Okay. Again, the sort of, it sounds like the middle path with, you know, the most response there. Again, maybe a response to a particular concern. Are there any causes or issues that do seem to motivate students more than others? Something's in the news and it grabs the attention and, yeah. Absolutely. So the starting point for this particular project was not so much social justice per se, but an overall reflection on questions of purpose. What did students have as a sense of purpose? And Professor Liang, observing after one too many instances of knowing somebody was sitting with a laptop shopping online in class and hearing questions over and over again about what was going to be on the exam as opposed to deeper questions about the content itself, and began then to kind of reflect on what this learning experience was like for students in an age where there's just a rapid dissemination of information and there's a kind of flattening of the hierarchy of expertise. Why go through the sage on the stage experience, especially when it's so expensive, when everything seems to be out there? So she really tried to reflect on how to make education meaningful for students and found ultimately that the sense of purpose that they were looking for came to them in the form of the devastation caused by Hurricane Katrina. And she was moved, as we all were, by the devastation of it, in particular by how it affected young people, that not only had they lost everything, perhaps materially, even family members, but they had lost something that was really critical to young people and their emerging identities, their communities, their peer groups. So she wanted to form a way that they could reach out to each other and offer each other support, and also that other youth around the country who hadn't been directly affected by this trauma but cared about people who did could also engage in responding to it. So once students had a sense that there was something concrete that they could do to respond to something that was real for them, that began to answer that question of the sense of purpose. Kind of as soon as it could be formulated, an opportunity like that could answer it. So she worked with educators from New England to New Orleans and had them reach out to students through listservs and invite them to submit reflections on what I wish I could tell someone in response to Hurricane Katrina. And hundreds of responses came in. Artwork, things that students had drawn and scanned, photographs, pieces of writing, essays, poems, reflections on events that had happened. And they kind of ranged the gamut in emotional tone. A lot of it was grief, a lot of it was hope, reflecting on the things like faith and community that were sustaining them at the time. And then to kind of organize all the content as it was coming in, Professor Liang worked with a team of students, and they began to put together this website. As they did so, they also realized it would be useful for young people to have a general resource where they could get information about things that affected them. So concerns like how to cope with stress, depression, substance and alcohol abuse, ways of getting information to be able to make better decisions. So they built out a site to include things like that as well. So already you begin to see what's wonderful and very challenging about the site, the sense that it can be more and more and do more and more, at the same time having to really try and keep the focus so that it can serve a clear and defined use. So as time went on and the use of the site continued, another aspect of life for young people was also beginning to sort of frame the question of purpose in a slightly different way, namely, of course, social networking and social media, which students were engaged in anyway. And again, what she was observing is that that tended to kind of happen for its own sake. And she and her students saw the possibility for trying to take that energy and direct it towards something that would have a more specific type of purpose. So, again, some questions. I know that, the range of opinions on every campus is probably extremely diverse about social media. It certainly is at Boston College, so I wanted to just kind of stop and, again, get a sense of where we all are with this in our respective campuses. So how do students that, on your campus use social media themselves? Just proposing some options that seem to be fairly common ones. Okay. Yeah, so the sort of social connection seems to be very important. Maybe less sort of productive or creative work, but certainly, engagement online is important, it seems. And finally, with teaching, how does social media play a role in teaching at your institution? Okay, yeah, the sort of middle ground. Does anyone know of any really good examples of using social media in teaching, using existing ones, Facebook, Twitter? Anything anyone would like to share? Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's something that maybe, more of us could tap into than are aware of, yeah. Okay. Another kind of focus for the new version of the site that came along independently was another project that Professor Liang was involved in outreach to former child soldiers in northern Uganda, students who had been pressed into service in armies there, and even after being released had significant trauma and a long way to go to sort of be able to reintegrate into mainstream communities. So she was part of an outreach there and noticed what a difference it made to them to have a sense that there were people in other parts of the world that cared about what had happened to them. So her vision was to try to find a way for students there and students in the United States and other parts of the world to connect with each other and exchange messages. So, these two components, taking the energy around social media and getting people, at least some of the time, to kind of redirect it a little bit, and then just tapping into that strong well of support that came out of the outreach to displaced victims of Hurricane Katrina and kind of taking that energy to a more global scale. So how was this done? She applied for a grant that our provost's office offers to support projects that use innovative technologies or technologies in innovative ways for teaching and research. So that's what allowed for the contracting of the graphic designer and the database developer. And again, a student team was responsible for actually planning out much of the site. So this included students that worked specifically on the main content areas, an overall team coordinator, and a teaching assistant who worked with the adolescent psychology course in which much of the content was developed and helped to manage that group. So obviously they had their work cut out for them. And they were thinking in terms of a few main areas. One was to kind of redesign the look and feel of the site to make it more appealing, especially to a slightly older audience. The original one had been aimed kind of mostly at a teenage population. And to think very critically in terms of the social networking features that they wanted. What was really going to be useful? What was really going to be manageable? Rethinking the content areas themselves, how to make it more positive, more compelling. And then finally, how to manage all of this, both in terms of building it and so that they could really effectively maintain it afterwards. So you can tell just by looking at the tags on the site, the challenge of keeping things focused and getting them finished. Have I mentioned that already? So we tried as much as possible to get them thinking very concretely early and often, thinking about their tasks lists. What would they actually need to do to get things done? And kind of helping them keep on track with that. We also tried as much as possible to put in their hands tools that they could use for day-to-day management of their work. So a couple of slides back, the image we were looking at was from a homegrown wiki that Boston College has developed. We set up a page for them where they could kind of track those things. We also wanted to equip them with tools that they could use outside of the work at Boston College and, you know, continuing on into their own careers. So we worked a lot with Google Docs. This particular example is a testing plan for, you know, just before we launched the site. And so we would typically set up something like this, and then they would, you know, be the ones responsible for kind of updating and maintaining it. And that really seemed to kind of draw forth a lot of positive peer pressure, that they began to feel accountable to each other, responsible to each other for, you know, doing their pieces on the project and getting things done. So I'd like to talk a little bit now about what actually came out of it. So they, in terms of rethinking the content, they used a sort of praxis model of thinking about how they and their peers actually learned. So starting with exploring, gathering information, and then reflecting on it and really kind of testing it out as they shared it in dialogue with their peers, and then finally taking it to its logical conclusion by acting on the things that, that they had been considering, and then, of course, leading back in, into deeper reflection. So at this point, I'd like to show you maybe the best example I can of what happened with each of those areas of the site in more detail. This is actually a presentation given at our annual faculty conference where we showcase innovative projects. So some members of the team were actually talking about the project. This was the sort of launch of it within Boston College. And so I'll let them tell you in their own words how it was used and what's happening with it. So we're going to hear first from one of the students who was involved in the project and helped really kind of think out the three areas of the site and how they could be used.
How it's been over a decade since I first started teaching. And when I think about kind of what's transpired in the last 10 years, and what's changed for me since that first day that I stepped into the classroom?
So we'll just wait for it to load up. Yeah, I'll try to. Can you all hear that very well? Yeah, if not, then I can, you know, rather than let too much time go, I'll...
as part of the Generation Pulse community.
Thank you.
And they can become involved in the website in three separate sections. First is the Explore section, which generally invites people to sort of learn information. It's where users of the website would come to explore, to gain information, and they do this through two forms, the Explore the World section and Explore Yourself. Explore Yourself contains a lot of the papers that are written by the students in Dr. Liang's adolescent psychology class, and so they contain topics such as emotional well-being, peer relationships, personal identity, health and nutrition, and each of these has, you know, things about eating disorders or depression, all sorts of things that are covered in psychology and that are relevant to youth today. And the Explore the World section, because we also think it's important in this process, it's not just, you know, about yourself, it's about the community. And so you need to be understanding your larger world, your larger, you know, both locally and internationally. And so we have a wonderful group of news team students here who are students at Boston College who, both undergraduate and graduate students, who write articles weekly on a variety of current topics, and they are mentored, Dr. Liang mentioned, by Karen Schiffman from NPR, who's taught them a lot of great writing skills, and they publish articles on a regular basis there. And then students are also encouraged to use the share section, which is sort of the idea being that you've gone through Explore, you've learned something about yourself and about your world, and now you have your own story, and you want to share that with others. And there's many, many ways that you can do that. We don't want to limit the way that somebody can express themselves. So we have Post Peace, which is a short sort of Twitter-like, what does peace mean to you in, you know, 200 characters or less. Exhibits, which sort of takes things from a few different sections around a topic. So we'll have one about Uganda and one about Katrina, because we've had a lot of outreach with those populations. And, of course, our Postcards Project, which... Dr. Liang mentioned earlier, which has Postcards for Peace, which are just generally about peace, and then also the regular exchanges between classrooms, which answer five separate questions. And the Stories section, which is organized in sort of a unique way, rather than being stories about, you know, a specific issue, they're sort of themes in terms of identity, justice, lost and found, love, and survival, which are sort of allow, we think, it to be very open-ended to whatever people's stories might be, and they can self-select into whichever group they'd like. And then, of course, artwork and blogs, which, you know, let people write on a regular basis for the website. And so then the idea is that you go through Explore, you do some learning, then you start talking about your story in the share section, you're, you know, conversing with the Generation Pulse community, and then you're moved to take action in the act section, where there's still, you know, to some extent there's more exploring going on there because we provide a lot of information in terms of, you know, literally ways that you can get involved in your local community, in your national community, or internationally. And it also has some user-generated content in that youth from around the country are encouraged to interview activists in their own community and to, you know, tell their stories of action and how, you know, what is social change to them, and really to take ways to do that. And there's a section about becoming a Gen Pulse advocate, you know, which is sort of more aimed at teachers and coaches and people in the community, leaders in the community who would want to be using the website to work with youth. And so, you know, obviously it's, you can do the Explore, Share, and Act in a different order and whatever, you know, you hop between them all, but that's sort of the, because obviously then you act and you're like, oh, well, I need to go learn more, and you go back to explore. But it's that's sort of the process that the website is laid out in.
So that gives you a bit more a sense of how they understood each of the areas. Meg also referred to the writing, especially in the Explore section, and the great mentoring that they had from the producer from NPR's On Point. And there was a conscious, you know, strategy of finding that the sort of blend of having very responsible, respectable academic writing that met those standards, but also wrote in a way that really could appeal on the web and, for the sort of, 10-second, 5-second eyeball time that you get to bring the reader in, to really kind of, to be able to do that. And so writing in ways that were experience near, that had a sort of immediate appeal, just kind of thinking very, very consciously about how to do that. So I'd like to show you also some of the other areas of the site that Meg referred to. The postcards, that was the form that this outreach to students in northern Uganda actually took. This is an area of the site where young people could upload images along with a small amount of text. So you see them organized here on a grid as they come into the site. And then, of course, if you go click on any of them individually, you can see them in a bit more detail. So they're submitted using a contribution form. There's a place to upload the image as well as a text editor for entering the text. And they're organized in terms of geography and also by theme. So in this case, the students were responding to the theme, what peace means to me, other topics, what is important to me, who is my hero. And we also developed a mechanism for postcards to be able to reply to each other. So in that way, students could be directly paired with each other and have the sense that there was a kind of personal element to the messages as they were received and responded to. So a postcard here from Uganda on the left, and then on the right, the response from a student here in the United States. Another area of the site, the blogs, advocates, students from a certain perspective, people around the world were invited to contribute blogs. So this example is from Christine Lamunu in northern Uganda, who works with the Postcards Project and is also a public health worker there and does a lot around AIDS advocacy. So sharing this blog through the site is just a way of sort of broadening the perspective for young people of what's happening in other parts of the world. So how to go about getting involved in GenPulse? Anybody can read the content that's there, but to actually contribute content, we ask people to join. It only seemed fair for me to pick on myself for this part of it, so, sorry for the mugshot. But, when people register and join, they're able to fill out a profile, including a photograph, information about where they are, interests that they have, and also a place where they can track content as they contribute it. So you can see from my list, I get to work on the really exciting stuff like documentation for the administrative team and testing and so forth. But, people can track the contributions they make on the site. And then they're able to go in and do these. So this form was basically adapted for every area where there are submissions. So you can see there the possibility for uploading an image and then the simple text editor, and also for selecting the place where an item will appear on the site so that they can kind of, self-determine that to some extent. All content is reviewed and approved by a member of the leadership team before it's published. So there's also a little kind of control held over that as well. And the networking tools, as on Facebook, young people who find they have things in common with each other can friend each other so that they can see each other's profiles, exchange messages through the site. And it's also possible for there's a sort of arrangement allowing people to follow each other on the site. So they can track the content of contributors they begin to find they're interested in and, kind of see what the next piece is as it comes up. So there are also groups on the site. This was implemented using the organic groups module in Drupal, the open source content management system that was used to build the site. On the other hand, we sort of took a step back from the full use of that module by not allowing groups to kind of self-generate, but having the leadership team keep some control over that for security reasons and for just to sort of maintain a certain sense of order on the site. So we take requests for groups to be set up, and then the team administers them. Where the groups have been especially useful, they can be joined voluntarily in some cases. In other cases, they're private. So that's especially useful when it comes to classes. It allows instructors to create an assignment within a group. students can upload content that can then be tracked there as a body. So the team thought very deliberately about how it wanted to manage the content, both to allow it to kind of be freshly renewing all the time, very dynamic, and also to be able to kind of highlight the things that they wanted to focus on. So on the homepage, all of the content that you see in the left column comes from features within the main content areas that they've chosen to highlight. So, for example, that top piece on the left, a reflection on Hurricane the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina 5 years on, again, kind of tapping into the sense of immediacy of that in the news and, inviting people to respond again. And then over on the right, the featured pulse is actually a postcard. Down at the bottom, meet the pulse. They rotate images and links into profiles of the leadership team so that people viewing the site have a sense of the community that they're coming into, which is kind of managing it. So all of those areas where the team kind of thinks, pretty carefully about what they want to select to highlight. Also, the top stories feature is just dynamically generated, depending on the number of hits that come in. So that's also a way for them to see what's of interest, what are people tracking, what stories have the most appeal. So in terms of administering the site, there are panels on the back end that allow them to do all of these tasks, to work with the groups, to highlight certain areas of content. And then for each of the main areas on the site, there's a menu that allows them to work with submissions as they're contributed. There's also commenting. So comments aren't moderated, but they are monitored. There's a flagging system. We've never actually seen it used. It's never needed to be used as far as we know, but it is there. So ways that they can keep tabs on all those things. Another thing that is very has worked very well for them is the ability to change the menus of the different areas. So, the main structure of the site is fixed, but within that there's some flexibility. They can add new items to a menu like this using the handles here. They can drag and drop the items around. So that gives them the ability to kind of respond dynamically themselves to add new content as they see the need for it. And they've also thought very deliberately about where all of this is going to go in the future. This is an organizational chart that they developed. And behind each of these positions, or at least most of them, is a job description and a plan for how to recruit new people and train them so that the system kind of perpetuates itself in the future. So let's see how we're doing on time. What is GenPulse on YouTube? Maybe I'll invite you to look at that link online, and we'll come back to it if there's time in the end. But it's a reflection. It's a reflection by a number of the team members talking about what the project has meant to them, and what they see in it, to get the word out there about it and encourage others to become involved. So as far as we've been able to measure them, what have the outcomes been? In a very general way, what we tend to hear from advocates, from adults who mentor young people, teachers, people who have worked with young people as they've been engaged in activities on the site, it not only raises awareness about the world out there, but their agency within it, the fact that they can do things. The more kind of specific and targeted, however small, the better. They have a sense that they can choose to do things or not do things that can have an outcome, that can make a difference to other people. Obviously, it's been easiest for us to observe the outcomes for the student team themselves, the group of students working on the site, as they've undertaken their tasks. And there, obviously, the technical skills they've been able to develop have been significant. Even more than that, though, maybe the organizational skills, the sense of what they can do with the technology to really make it effective. And their sense of real ownership of the project that transcends their own involvement of it. What kind of life will it have beyond that? We've also seen a kind of there's a great humility that they bring to the complexity of these issues. When the Postcards Project first got started, the name that we came in with was Postcards to Africa, and there's sort of compelling mystique about that title. At the same time, some of them were very concerned not to have a kind of unintentional byproduct of suggesting that a group from the Northern Hemisphere kind of has the prerogative to reach out, even, you know, reach down, if you will, to a group from elsewhere that, that would need their help. And they thought very carefully about how to craft a name that would really, you know, suggest the kind of two-way communication that they really wanted to see emerge from that. And so the title that they ended up working with then was Postcards for Peace. But that sort of reflection was very much a part of the processes as well. So as of yet, there hasn't been any really formal assessment on the site and its effects, but that's something that's definitely, you know, planned for the future. The site includes a survey tool, and the results from that can be ported into SPSS or, you know, and other formats that can be worked with to do the analysis. So there's a research team that would work with Professor Liang to do this and really try and gather some data on the effects of the work on the site. Already they've been able to do some initial studies in Uganda on the impact there, and overall it's, you know, students seem to have a better outlook for their own future, a better sense of engagement in their own communities after some of the activities that they've been involved with, especially with the postcards. So future plans, the main use for the site continues to be teaching in these courses at Boston College, but very much with an eye to expanding beyond that. So there are pilot programs being planned that would work more with schools in the area of kind of Boston and surrounding towns, in schools there, and then the global outreach that's already begun, finding ways to continue that. So I'm curious to, you know, what we've developed this from a very particular situation at Boston College. I could imagine a need like this and everywhere. Some of it would work in another context. Some of it wouldn't work. Some of the needs are the same. Some are different. From what you've seen, I'm curious to know how you, in your own context, would find a resource like that useful. So I've just proposed here some of the main things that we've chosen to work with. Of course, I'd be interested in hearing others that might suggest themselves. So feel free to click in. Wow, a real range. That's interesting. And I know that in cases where it's difficult to imagine how to build things into a curriculum, at least the sense that it's out there to be encouraged for personal use is that's something that you know, could be valuable in itself. So a final question, what might interest young people the most about GenPulse? Wow, again, a real range. That's interesting. We were very conscious doing it of the way that different aspects of it might appeal to different learning styles, different modes of creativity. So it's encouraging to see that kind of spread, that, you know, there could be something useful there in lots of different ways, depending on the need, depending on the context. Is there anything that anyone could share that kind of struck them specifically? It's unfair putting you all on the spot in the middle of the afternoon after a good lunch. Yes. So helping them see a kind of purpose for it, an engagement with it that isn't about credit, that isn't about doing something for class, but... Right, absolutely. Okay. So, conscious of the time here, I just wanted to wrap up with some thoughts on what did we learn from it. Obviously, it's a work in progress, you know, warts and all. It's a kind of project that students volunteered for, and you know, everybody who's been involved in it has been very proud of it. At the same time, we've learned an enormous amount, both from what's been successful, what's been less than successful. So in that sense, we want to propose it as a model, you know, for what we've learned from it, as much as for the product itself. And these reflections are ongoing. But, you know, certainly the more student-centered a learning process like this can be, the better, that they're the ones that can discern what are the things that are going to drive their interests that are important to them, giving them the chance to do the critical thinking and focus on those. What we ran into over and over again was the role of the educator, that modeling best practices, giving guidance as far as standards, both academically, professionally, helping them figure out how to approach a project like this and manage it to completion, that's something that that you know they really you know can look to instructors for. So rather than the kind of growth of the one being a diminution of the other, the strength of the one very much encourages the strength of the other. That you know the more careful guidance they get from a mentor, from an educator, the more that empowers them to do their best work. What does technology do best? It certainly, you know, it can offer opportunities that weren't there before, especially in, you know, reaching out to students with learning styles of all types. At the same time, one of the main things it can offer is just its simplicity, convenience, a good way to get things done. So keeping it as simple as possible is really, you know, one of the main goals that we began to emerge with as the project went on, both something that would be manageable to build and manageable to maintain as time went on in the future. So I'd certainly, you know, welcome any questions from anyone who's interested in knowing more about it, being involved. I'm not sure that it's ready yet for large-scale involvement outside the BC community, but I'd love to hear from anyone and to follow up with Professor Liang, make those connections if anyone is interested in involvement in the future. So I saw a hand or two already. Yeah, we tried to get them to think about what end outcome did they want to see happen? What kind of learning activity, what kind of learning engagement did they want to see come out of this? So the more they thought about it in a way, the simpler it became. You know, being able to just exchange with peers around ideas and concerns that they had in common. So both that on an individual level, but then also as a sort of group mechanism, finding ways that instructors could you know, have a context where students could submit things online that they could both see in the kind of, you know, the whole grid of postcards, you know, you could view them there, but also to isolate them as a single group where they could be, you know, looked at and evaluated. So, that's a challenging question because there's so many different ways that the site can be used for networking, but I hope that helps in a general way, just, you know, kind of focusing on what were the tasks that they wanted to be able to do with it. Does that help at least address what you were asking? Okay.
What's the students that you see that are involved in, what's their most positive comment and what's their most negative comment about their experience?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, the most positive comment, I think, direct you to the YouTube video where they're saying a lot of those things in their own words. And I'll put that link up on the site, on the EDUCAUSE record. Just a sense of becoming aware of what's out there in the rest of the world and that they actually can have an impact on it. That, you know, from a position of relative powerlessness, they began to see ways that they could engage. On the negative side, a couple of points. One was that because it is so big, because it is so vast, that, and I'm talking about the student management team as they were kind of working their way through the process, that, that it was very difficult for them to, you know, be able to sort out their priorities and figure out what they wanted to do. From students in the class who participated, there was a lot of discussion about that question that I think we've touched on a little bit already of, you know, whether or not it should be extra credit, whether or not it should be part of curriculum work, whether it should be something that they do completely independently. And, depending on how that was approached, there could be some cynicism on the student side. So I'm making a postcard, so what difference does that make? You know, what does that actually do in the world? And that's one of those things that it just very much depends on the angle that you take looking at it. And the teaching assistant and the professor could talk to them very concretely about ways that it could make a difference. But, you know, at some point, there's also, you put something like that out there, and that's also a possible response. So, any other questions or thoughts? Okay. Yeah, I think we're just at time or even
we
beyond it.
Okay.
I certainly want to thank Sarah. I got her name wrong when I introduced you at the beginning. Thank you, Sarah, and it lived up to what I had come to hear about myself. I strongly want to encourage you to make sure you go right to one of those email terminals and provide Sarah with a little bit of online feedback, or do it on the website up until the 29th of October. So thanks again, Sarah.
Thank you.
I love what you're doing here. Here's my card. If you're from the east, around the corner from the upper east coast.
Yeah. Okay.
That was really nice. Sarah lugged those clickers in over here, so I really appreciate it if you'd kind of lug them up to the front of the room or the back of the room and the table on the way out, either or.
Yeah, feel free to leave them anywhere. We'll pick them up. Thank you.